Hi everybody, nice to see you all. The last few weeks, those who've been here know, we've been talking about fear and faith. How we respond to fear in all its forms, anxiety, uncertainty, feelings of threat and lack of safety. And how we respond with faith, with bitachon, with emunah. And that what we mean by that is not a faith which is that everything is going to be okay, because everything won't necessarily be okay. But rather, a faith that says we have the capacity to be with and be okay with whatever arises, with whatever comes to us. And so today we're going to continue exploring a little bit some of the nature of this question of how we work with fear and how we work with faith. And how we start to develop this capacity of being present with and open to whatever arises in our experience, whatever arises in our lives. Last time we ended by talking about asking sort of this fundamental question when we're caught in places of uncertainty, which is just asking what's deeper at this moment? What can I trust at this moment? Which is deeper than this experience of fear at the moment, which is deeper than this uncertainty, which is deeper than the thoughts and feelings and experiences and identity, all of which come and go, all of which arise and pass away. What is it that doesn't come and go? What's deeper? It's the same question of asking, in a certain sense, who am I really? Below all the fleeting moments of experience, the fleeting parts of my identity. Who's behind this story of me? Who's behind? Who's sort of looking out of my eyes? Who's actually present in this moment? And when we ask that question, at least at times, we can notice that there's something more expansive underneath. There's something that we can trust which is wider than the uncertainty of this present moment. Something which isn't tied to my particular qualities or who I am. It isn't tied to my identity as this or that or my experience in life. It's something which is just part of what it means to be a human being. It's part of our fundamental nature. It's part of our soul, our divine nature, which is open and expansive and which in a sense can always be trusted. It can be trusted because it's always there to hold us, to provide us with that fundamental safety. And to discover that true nature, we start to train ourselves in that process of discovering that true nature. Part of the way we train ourselves is we sit. And by sitting, we start to see that everything which arises and passes, arises and passes. Our thoughts arise and pass. And our feelings arise and pass. And our experiences arise and pass. And even our thoughts about who we are and our nature of our identity arise and pass. And yet something is left deeper than that underneath. We train in it every morning in our tradition. We train when we start with the morning with Modeh Ani, with an expression of gratitude, which is an expression of sort of a fundamental expression of trust, right? It's a willingness to see what is right at this moment. I wake up, I say, Modeh Ani lefanecha. I'm grateful for you. I'm grateful to you for this fact of my human life, that I can see that there's a fundamental all-rightness in my life, in my moment, in this situation, even if many other things about my life are not great at this moment, right? We still start with that waking up with that notion of gratitude. We start by waking up and we say, Elohe neshama shenatata bi tahorahi. We say our soul, our fundamental nature is pure. It's unblemished, it's bright, it's shining. No matter what we've done, no matter what we've experienced, that unblemished nature is always there, waiting to be rediscovered again and again. And we say every morning, and we start every morning with compassion and love. With Ahava Rabba Avtanu, with the Ahavta et Hashem Elokecha. Because it's from that place of compassion and love that we actually feel and experience and are able to trust that wider sense. That sense that there is some fundamental okayness to being alive in this world. Despite whatever else is happening around. Whatever else is happening around me, there's a fundamental okayness, there's a fundamental enoughness, we could say. It's like we often have this feeling maybe just me, but you might have this feeling too, right? It's not enough. Something's not enough. Like, it's not quite enough. Whatever it is, like, it hasn't quite worked out enough. We haven't accomplished enough. We haven't seen enough. The relationship isn't enough. Our connection with somebody isn't enough. The way we're experiencing the world at the moment isn't enough. It isn't alive enough. We're not alive enough. We're not open enough. Something isn't enough at this moment. And part of this notion of trust is stopping for a moment and recognizing that actually it is enough. It's enough. Right now, this second, it's enough. It's enough at this moment. And just the willingness to acknowledge and surrender to that enoughness is itself profoundly healing. Itself profoundly opening. And so this faith in our true nature also means that we can be a little bit gentler with all the other manifestations that we experience. We don't have to sort of identify them with them so strongly or take them so seriously. The thoughts, the fears, the worries, all the things that come up in this, come up in us, and all the things that go. There can be a lightness and a humor towards them. A lightness which is a seeing the craziness and the silliness of our own mind. The craziness of what it means to be a human being. Without getting too caught up in the whole process. Without getting too serious about it. A member of parliament once sent to Disraeli, like the famous British prime minister, said, "Sir, you will either die on the gallows or of some unspeakable disease." Disraeli said, "That depends, sir, whether I embrace your policies or your mistress." So we may not all be as quick-witted as Disraeli. But we also don't have to believe the phantasms our mind creates. We say those things to ourselves all the time. You know, you're going to die in the gallows or some unspeakable disease. Or in smaller ways, right? I'm going to mess this up. I'm not going to get this done. My boss is going to be mad. My partner is going to be upset with me. I'm going to fail in this situation. And we're working on having our mind say back, you know, sort of blowing a raspberry. You know, like just making a joke. Being a little bit light about it, recognizing it's not all so serious. I don't have to take these thoughts so seriously. I'm stuck in traffic and oh my God, oh no, I'm going to be late for this thing and it's going to be a disaster. Really? No, not really. It's going to be fine, right? It's actually going to be fine. And just noticing that for a moment, having the lightness when our mind says, oh, you're a failure, or you're going to fail, or you're worthless, or nobody cares about you, or nobody will care about you. You know, just, I don't know. Right? Telling it it's not so serious. It's like in the Peanuts cartoons, right? All the adult voices. They're like, wah, 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 right? As long as it's just like having the ability to say, it's like, all right, just my mind going again, wah, 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 right? I don't have to take it seriously. It's just my mind saying stuff, right? Unfortunately, because it's our minds, we tend to take it seriously. We tend to think, oh, I think that. My mind's saying it, right? But it's not true. You know that your mind says all kinds of stuff you don't believe. Because you think stuff sometimes, and later you're like, I don't think that. That's not true. Why did I even say that? I didn't even believe that, right? So if we can just notice it a little bit sooner and notice, oh, my mind's just saying stuff. That's okay. That's what the mind does. But I don't have to buy into it. I don't have to believe it. I don't have to get lost in it. We can laugh at our fear and mistrust. Remember? I was looking at some evaluations of a class I had taught. And most of the evaluations, it was on like, you know, it's like fair, good, very good, excellent, whatever it is. And the evaluations were mostly very good. Right? And Debbie, my partner, asked me, how are the evaluations? And I said, okay. And she said, but it says very good. Right? And I just kind of laughed at myself, right? Because for me, like, very good was okay. But actually, it means very good. That's what it means. Those are the words. So why did my mind have to translate very good into okay? Right? Because I have some standard, some expectation that only excellent is okay. Excellent is good, right? Excellent is maybe good. Because my mind has some story around achievement and trust and fear that says I constantly have to push myself or I won't succeed. And that's a story I've worked with, you know, a long time. It's a story that is a lot less present in me. It's a story that enabled me that's lighter, and so I was able to laugh and recognize, oh, right, it actually says very good. That's what it means. Maybe I should sort of just accept that at the moment. And so we start to notice that there's something deeper than this crazy mind. There's some lightness and there's some ability to laugh at our own insanity. Not a special insanity, right? Just that insanity of being human. Just that craziness of our mind and the way it operates and the way it gets us into trouble. And when we have that faith, when we start to touch that deeper place, then there are other kinds of trust which can also arise. There's a trust which can arise, which is a trust in this very moment, in this moment itself. The knowledge that there's something basically okay about this moment. And there's a trust in that this moment, even with its difficulty, has something fundamental and profound to teach us. The Maggid of Mezrich says, an early Hasidic master, he says, everything that we see, hear, and experience, and all of the events of our life, they all come to teach us something. They come to wake us up. They come to wake us up. And what an extraordinary transformation it would be if every experience we had, we stopped and said, how can I awaken from this? How can I learn from this? Right? It's like I was talking to one of my teachers, and they talked about it's as simple as saying, changing the statement, I have to do X, to I get to do X. Right? Just change that one word and it changes your entire experience of what it is you're doing. Right? It's like, think about it, you're like, oh, I have to do this. And you just say, I get to do this. It's like completely different, right? Just in that moment. And it's recognizing that whatever it is you have to do or get to do at that moment, there's something to be learned there. And it's true in our fear as well. Our fear arises, and we can ask ourselves sort of, oh, what's asking for attention right now? What's asking for acceptance right now? We can trust that there's some wisdom here. There's something that's asking to be seen. There's something that's asking to be heard. Often, of course, we feel the opposite. We feel like, why are you talking in the middle of my meditation talk? Right? But the invitation is to approach each moment with curiosity and gratitude. What would it be like to pick? You pick for yourself right now. Like, what's the hard thing that you for you that comes up? I'm going to say anxiety. And to be like, oh, thank you. Thank you for coming, right? Thank you for coming. What do you have to teach me? What do you have to teach me? Like, whatever it is. Maybe the hard thing for you is anger. It's like, oh, thank you. Thank you for coming. Right? What do you have to teach me? What am I about to learn at this moment? And it's not about, it's important, it's not about being Pollyannish. It's not about saying, you know, everything's for the best in the best of all possible worlds. Everything isn't for the best. Right? Bad things happen. It's not about saying everything's good. It's about saying, this has happened now. How do I use it to awaken? This has happened now. It's painful. It's difficult. How do I use it to awaken? Instead of how do I use it to shut down? And part of the ability to do that, part of the wisdom of that trust, and also the ability to acquire that trust, is the knowledge that it will pass, that nothing's forever. It's a faith actually in impermanence. It's a faith in the constant nature of the change of our world. The Pisetzner says that change, transformation, chidush, is actually the most fundamental nature of reality. It's the most fundamental nature of what reality is. And we have to know that, he says, because for creation to happen, change must already be possible. Right? It's the prerequisite actually for creation, for change, because creation is just another form of change. it's bringing into being. And when we see that, we can recognize that everything changes. Everything changes. Everything shifts. Everything passes. Whatever feels overwhelming or too much, it's not always there. Not only will it pass, but at any moment, it's gone. Fear. We're overwhelmed by fear. And then at a certain moment, oh, not scared at this moment. Actually feeling okay at this moment. Often we don't notice that, those gaps, those times when it's not present. And so we tell this story or narrative which says, I have been constantly trapped in fear all day. Or I've been constantly trapped in whatever trapped in. Or I'm an X kind of person. And saying I'm an X person, an identity, is just another way of saying I'm this way. Right? This is the way I am. This is the way I always am. But it's not true. I'll challenge you. Anything that you think that you are, if you try to really notice it, you'll notice that it's not always true. Whatever quality you think you have, whichever kind of thoughts you think you have, whatever kind of emotion you think you have, if you actually observe it moment to moment, you will just notice that sometimes it's not true. Doesn't mean that might not be a large part of your experience, but it's not always true. You're not always like that. And this trust in impermanence is also a deep kind of letting go of control, right? Which is faith. So letting go of control, it's a recognizing that we're not fundamentally in charge, that we can't fix it all, we can't make everything okay, we're not in power over everything. And fear is actually that response which says, I'm not willing to recognize that I'm not in control. I'm not willing to give up control. I'm desperately kind of holding on. The poet Mary Oliver said, to live in this world, you must be able to do three things. To love what is mortal, to hold it against your bones, knowing your own life depends on it, and when the time comes, to let it go. To let it go. That's this process. We love deeply. It's not about being indifferent to the world. We love deeply that which is mortal, which is everything. And we hold it to our bones. And then when the time comes, we let it go. And if we don't let it go, then we suffer. It's just that simple. Because we can't control it all. We can't keep the good stuff and we can't stop the bad stuff from not happening. At least not all the time. We can do that sometimes, right? And so we have to learn that ability, which is this ability of faith, to both cherish and to let go. To cherish and to let go at the same time. It's about being an Eved Hashem, right? Which is a slave of God. It's an important piece. We come out of Mitzrayim. We don't come out of Mitzrayim to be autonomous individuals. Those words don't appear in the Torah, right? We go from being Avdei Paro to being Avdei Hashem, right? From being slaves of Pharaoh to being slaves of God. And being a slave of God is recognizing in a fundamental and deep way that we're not in charge. We're not fundamentally in charge. Not being fundamentally in charge doesn't mean that we have no efficacy. It means, as one student on a retreat said, I have choice, but I don't have control. Right? When usually she said, I was struggling for control and feeling like I had no choice. And we often do that. We're like struggling for control and feel like we're out of choice. And the reality is we always have choice and we never have control. We never have control, ever. We're never fully in control. Stuff happens, right? I mean, people were in America, you know, Hurricane Sandy. I mean, I was in New York just after it. You know, New York City, like, right? Completely, just parts of it, you know, very incredibly sad. My sister who lives there was doing a lot of work going into buildings where, you know, elderly people were trapped for days without electricity, without water. We're not in control, right? Despite all of our genius and wonder and power and all the great things we do, we're just not in control. And so when we're trying to be in control, there's a lot of tension. There's a lot of struggle, there's a lot of effort, and it never accomplishes its purpose. It never gives us the control, and it never gives us what we want from the control, which is to feel safe. Right? We want to be in control, because when we're in control, when we know what's going to happen, then we're safe. Then we know what's happening next. Then there are no surprises. And it never works out. And instead what happens is we have anxiety, we have disappointment, we have suffering, when the control falls apart and things break down. But if we can recognize that I'm not in control, but I always have a choice, I always have a choice, which is the choice of how to respond to this moment. Sometimes the response is, oh, I can fix this thing. Let's fix it. I just broke my arm. Let's go to the hospital and get it put in a cast. Fantastic. Sometimes the response is, oh, I can't do anything to affect the external situation right now, but I can actually be with what is happening. I don't have to suffer because of it. I always have that space of choice. Aja Chan, who's a Thai teacher, famous statement, he said, to me this cup is already broken, and because I know its fate, I can enjoy it fully here and now. Right? Because I know that it's going to be gone one day. And it's actually incredibly powerful when we really know that everything is going to pass. Then there's no reason to fear and resist its passing. There's no reason to cling to its presence. And so we can then open to it completely. We can really, really experience it. And you can investigate this yourself. You can think about something you really like, some object you really like, some object that is precious to you. And you might notice, not only do you enjoy the thing, but there's sometimes a subtle tension in your relationship to it. And that tension is the fear of its loss. Right? Is the fear of something happened to it, the fear of its breaking, the fear of something happening, or something happening even to some person you love, right? So you're relating to them, but there's a tension, there's a protectiveness in that relationship, which means you're not fully open to them, because there's a fear of that passing. The fear of that passing may be an actual fear of something happening to them, them dying, right? Which happens to everybody, a reasonable fear. Might be the fear of, I'm going to say something wrong and they're going to get mad at me and there's going to something happen to the relationship, right? But in that fear of holding on, there's a place in which we cannot fully open to the experience of the moment. We can't fully appreciate and treasure and just have joy in that place. And we can shift that. We can shift that. I know for me, this teaching actually has been very impactful and very concrete. It's like one small concrete transformation I've had. I used to get upset when things broke or things happened or money got lost, and now I just don't. It's like a thing breaks, it's like, oh, that broke. Move on, right? That's what happens to things. Things break. No matter how, not that long ago, something from my sister, which I had, Debbie broke by mistake, It's like, well, that's what happens. It was going to break, right? That's what happens to stuff. Stuff breaks. Stuff passes on. And it's so just, in a very small way, so liberating. It's like, who needed the pain and suffering of getting upset over something breaking? Who did that help? Didn't help me, that's for sure. Didn't help anybody else, right? Didn't help my kids, didn't help anybody. And without that, there's just so much more freedom and looseness. It's like, oh, how much more I can enjoy that? How much more I can enjoy this moment? How much more I can just not get stuck on what just happened and move on? It's like, oh, broken? Can I do anything about it? No. Really totally broken. Okay. Put it in the garbage. Move on. Do the next thing, right? No need to get upset. And in that willingness to do it, there is, it's that small way in doing it with objects. And as we make that bigger and bigger, it's the kind of fundamental movement of liberation. It's the fundamental movement of liberation. Trungpa Rinpoche, Tibetan teacher, said, it's necessary to drop altogether the idea of security and see the irony of your attempts to secure yourself, the irony of your overlapping structure of self-protection. We're trying to protect ourselves all the time. We're trying to make ourselves safe. We're trying to make ourselves safe, 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 safe. And we each do it in our own a million ways. We do it physically. We do it in what we say and don't say. We do it in the emotions that arise in us. We do it in our ideas, our categories, our ideologies, right? We have this thought about this person. We put them in this box. That makes us feel safe in some way. We do it about our fantasies, which is a kind of thumb-sucking, as one of my teachers said, right? Makes us feel kind of safe and secure a little bit for a moment. We put it in our preconceptions, which makes us allow us to put situations in a box, and so we feel safe and secure. We know what's happening. We know how to understand the situation. But the truth is, no matter how much we try to make ourselves safe, no matter how much we try to lock the doors and put on the alarms and build high walls, none of that will make us safe. We all actually know that. Intellectually, you know that, right? None of those things, none of the things we ever do will actually make us safe. Because there is no fundamental safety in this life. It just doesn't exist. It's not a bad thing or a good thing. It just happens to be the nature of the world we live in, right? Which is, stuff happens in all kinds of ways, all the time, and we don't have fundamental control over it. And the only security we genuinely have, genuine security, is our ability to let go into the unknown. When we're genuinely willing to let go, genuinely willing to open, genuine safety and security is available. It's, I know it's like a tough thing to say, but in my experience, it's just true. It's just true. There's nowhere else to hang that place of safety. There's nowhere else that we can find safety, because safety doesn't exist in any external conditions. It's just not there. At the most fundamental level, which you know intellectually, right? You and everybody you know is going to die, and you have no idea when that's going to happen, right? That's just true. We all know that's true. Some of us maybe know it a little more internally, maybe because we've experienced that in some way. For many of us, it's hard to really know that, actually, internally, right? But it's true. It's just true of the nature of human existence. And it's not actually a depressing fact. It's just a fact. Right? It's just a fact. It's only depressing and difficult if we resist it. If we just recognize that's the nature of human life, then it's okay. I'm going to end sort of it's a big piece to end with, but it's an important piece. And so I'm going to end with a story of mine from a retreat I was on. Very important moment of insight for me. I was on a retreat, quite a long retreat, like 3 weeks. And I was experiencing intense suffering, intense anxiety. I was in an interview with one of the teachers. I was telling her what was happening for me. And she said, "What if you were this way for the rest of your life? Would you be okay?" It was quite shocking, right? I didn't feel like a pat. It was like, she was like, "What if you're this way for the rest of your life? Would you be okay?" And surprisingly, the answer was yes. Actually, yes. I could actually see. Something like that question could help me see at that moment. Even in the midst of that suffering, I could be okay. I could actually be okay. There was a way to open and hold even that which felt the moment before overwhelming. I could be okay. I could be okay. And that is fundamentally true. That's actually true. You can always be okay. You can always be okay. It doesn't mean at that moment you figured out how to do that, right? But it means that that possibility is available, that possibility is there. And in that possibility is real freedom, is real liberation. Whatever it is you feel like, wherever it is you feel like, "I'm trapped, I'm drowning, I can't get out of this, this is too much, I'm suffering, this is too hard." Whatever it is, the reality is that you are able. At some point, at some moment, at some point in your life, doesn't mean you're able to do it this second, but that you are fundamentally able to find your fundamental okayness, to find that fundamental security and trust, which is the trust and security of groundlessness. As the Magid says, to trust, betach Hashem, is this trust in ayin, in emptiness and nothingness. Because that is the actual foundation of trust. That's the actual place of faith. The place of faith is that place of fundamental radical openness. We're not always there, right? That's okay. But there's something precious and important about knowing that place exists. Knowing that exists. And touching it at moments in our lives. And so knowing, even when we feel our most lost or most confused, that place of openness is always an ever-present possibility for us right now in this present moment. So we'll stop there. Pause there for now. It's always a pause. And as usual, take questions, thoughts, things people have to say or share or thinking about.
If something comes, you can itemize it, label it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you said that thought, fear. Can you? I'm finding that I just need to make it more specific because otherwise, at least my mind is telling me that if I make it more specific, it's not going to come back to you. So just saying thought, it has to be sadness, judgment. You know.
Yeah.
Doctor's appointment. You know. Is that?
That's totally fine. That's totally fine. Right, so to just notice, there's nothing wrong with it, and it can be helpful sometimes. For instance, it can be helpful. One reason it can be helpful is that it helps us see our thought patterns sometimes.
Right.
So it's judgment arose a lot. That's interesting. Right. Or sadness keeps arising. No problem with that. Notice if it's an effort to control, because sometimes it's an effort to get back into the story. It's sadness because
right.
Then you know you're lost. Then you're in trouble. So you still want to keep it. It's one word maximum.
Right.
Sadness. That's fine. Oh, sadness. Coming back. Sadness. Coming back.
So,
yeah.
The idea of thought and feeling is that the idea of openness and acceptance very compelling to me. Whether it's with the idea of a vase breaking or something happening in life. But a question I have there is where is the border between radical acceptance and passivity? And sort of standing back as things happen, always saying, there's nothing I can do here. My friend is being chased by a tiger.
It's too bad,
everyone dies.
Yeah. Great question. There's no border. There's no border because they're like skew lines. The one actually doesn't have anything to do with the other. And I'll explain what I mean by that now. Radical acceptance has nothing to do with passivity. Nothing to do with passivity. We want to fully accept and open to this moment as it is every moment. That has no relation. It has a relation because the relation is then we know how to act with wisdom. But it has no relationship to, determinative relationship to then what we do in the next moment. Right? So my friend is getting chased by a tiger. I want to be fully open to that fear and then be like, how do I help save him from the tiger? Right? So it has nothing to do, there's no relationship between the internal movement of acceptance and saying, therefore I'm not doing anything externally. Now, in my experience, there is some more wisdom which comes around that. So, for instance, things where I think I need to be doing some things, and I recognize, I don't need to do anything, actually. The vase is just broken. Give it up. Let it go. But I would say, on the other hand, for me, my own personal experience is let's say political activism. When I feel, when I don't have the acceptance place, then for me, it is so fraught, frustrating, and disappointing, and enraging, that I can't be active. Just me. And when it's I'm not in control. Doesn't mean I can't choose to go to the rally, to write the letter, to do it, to do whatever I can to do, knowing that there's no guarantee that what I'm going to do is going to bring the results I want to have. There's no guarantee. But I can be okay with that, there being no guarantee. Then for me, there's a lot of freedom. Then I can act, and then I can work in the world. And so that, actually, that distinction is crucial. It's absolutely crucial. It's the difference between detachment and non-attachment. We don't want to be detached at all from anything. The point is not to care about stuff and not to not be active in the world, etc. We want to not be non-attached, which is that sense of recognizing I'm not in control. However much I care, I still can't control it. It's like the caring may be 100%, but I can just still do what I can do, and then I have to see what happens. And there's no point in suffering from not being able to accomplish what I want to accomplish, even if I put my all into it.